we are going to jump right into what will be just an addendum, if you will, a preface to the next pod. And it has to be addressed. That is the Denver Nuggets firing head coach Michael Malone with just 4 games left in the regular season. This is puzzling, man. This is another one of these Memphis Grizzlies situations. There was a big reaction to Taylor Jenkins being fired last week. I talked about it on JB's show right after it happened. And I said, I mean, this doesn't make sense. And it makes me think directly of, okay, the organization must be dealing with 2 sides not working, because we know that he has a track record of winning at the least with the program. So there must be a butting of heads, a clash of interests or styles somewhere between a meaningful member must be the star of the team and the coach. I said I said that on the show that, I mean, it makes me think that something between him and John Morant wasn't kosher. And also, if you were just paying attention to a few of those games leading up to the firing, it definitely seemed like the team was backsliding a bit. The exact same can be said for this Denver Nuggets situation. And I would date this back to when they faced the Lakers and one of Luka's first games with the team with the healthy LeBron. And I've referenced it a couple times in this pod. I think the Nuggets were exposed that night. He had 6 turnovers, was very out of place. The Nuggets got pieced up by the Lakers. And we know the Lakers' track record with the Nuggets over the last few years. Meaningful win. And ever since then, Boston did it to him. Golden State did it to him just like that. We saw what happened with Minnesota in the double overtime game. And I came on here and I said, hey, that is a bad sign that Jokic had a Herculean game. And the team lost in double overtime as the Minnesota Timberwolves were trying to give the game away. So since the firing happened this morning, there's been a series of push alerts ranging from, okay, the general manager and the head coach weren't on speaking terms. They didn't see eye to eye. Nikola Jokic was unsatisfied with the team's defensive effort and performance. There was reports that, you know, a few more in between. Basically, the team wasn't playing right, and that they wanted to, they hope the firing can jolt the team into a positive upswing going into the playoffs. I have no idea if there's any history that suggests firing your coach this late can turn into motivation. We'll get 2 examples of it in this postseason. And it's not that noteworthy to me beyond that. I mean, there's a lot to find ironic in the Michael Malone situation, but I'm not going to jump on a dude on his worst day. Maybe he's happy right now. I have no idea. He might be back in the league this next season, but who knows, man? That happened. Let's go ahead and send out a shout out to Jalen Wells from the Memphis Grizzlies after suffering a who knows what injury. It looks like he broke his wrist at least on a scary looking fall from a fast break dunk where he kind of got undercut. I wouldn't call it excessively dirty. To me, it was one of those moments that just present themselves when you're playing competitive sports where you're vulnerable. And it had an unfortunate ending. We saw that in the Final Four game, which was one of the most viewed Final Fours in recent memory. Sion James got kind of clobbered on a dunk attempt, and the ricochet from his fall, he fell right on his head. If he didn't have dreads or locks, his skull would have felt that, and he would have most certainly been concussed. I believe, and am under the impression, that he still was concussed. And we don't talk about basketball player toughness quite like we do in other sports. Other more visibly contact sports, but basketball players demonstrate a tremendous amount of toughness through the nicks and nagging injuries that develop throughout a season, as do all professional athletes, just to be clear. But that Sion James play, I saw nobody talking about the fact that he was back in the game when I think that there was, I don't know if the due diligence took place between James falling when he did and being put back in the game. And I even hate to draw the line to it, but he was also the person inbounding the ball for Duke with the game on the line. You had the ball that got tipped out first, and then the second pass was a lollipop to the middle of the court I'm not attacking James whatsoever. I don't think that looks like to me due diligence wasn't done, because we see it in football to where it's an instant reaction now. We know, oh, hold on, bro needs to go get checked out. And if anything, his day might be done. It doesn't really matter the circumstances. We all saw that. We know what can happen when things that look like that happen. I thought that James had something that didn't look the best. And knowing what we know, and when you know better, you got to do better. I didn't think that he should have been back in the game. Definitely wouldn't have had him inbounding the ball in that moment as well. But like I said, try to keep it brief. Terrell is joining right about now. Just sit back and relax, because we let it rip for an hour and change, talking plenty of WNBA, plenty of transfer portal and conference realignment. So tap into what Terrell's doing. Y'all enjoy this episode. We'll be back very shortly, probably with a live stream. So just be on the lookout, okay? Late night, the late show with D-Hoop University. D-Hoopster, we here, man. Enjoy the pod. Red light is on. With that being said, hello and welcome to Season 3, Episode 12 of the D-Hoop University Podcast. This is your boy, Daryl Harris, also known as D-Hoopster. It's Monday night. We have a new college basketball champion joined by Chief Talk That Talk, ASAP Relly, Chatterbox. T, what's going on with you, bro?
What's going on, man? What's going on? As usual, happy to be here. Thank you. Thank you for having me, for sure.
Before we even get too far, man, because I know you, I didn't get a chance to play it back yet today, but you were running on Talk That Talk. Let them know where they can find you and what you've been rocking on Talk That Talk for anybody who might be, you know, a new listener, just kind of getting familiar or hearing you. So I want that to be out there, because Terrell's active, man. We have been for a while now, so it's like muscle memory for us to kind of jump into it sometimes.
Yeah, nah, definitely. Earlier today was this was episode 24, I think, of season 7 of the Talk That Talk radio show. So we've accumulated, I think, 340 shows out here. But yeah, man, if anybody wants to watch it, you guys can watch it live on YouTube Mondays 3 to 5 p.m. And then on Thursday nights 10 to midnight, you guys can go to YouTube. Again, it's Talk That Talk radio show. Again, you can go to YouTube, go to the search bar. It's Talk That Talk radio show. It's pretty much the same across every platform. That would be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Instagram, Facebook. The one thing that's different is our Twitter. Our Twitter is at Talk That Talk LV. But yeah, man, aside from that, everywhere that I just mentioned, you guys can kind of follow us and stay up to date with everything we got going.
Yes, indeed. And you got to do that. That is your homework assignment for today. Is especially, man, being in Las Vegas, man. This is, you know what? I'm excited. Final Four is going to be here, I believe, in 2028. Possibly 2027. I'll fact check that in just a second. But this part, this element, and with this, we sort of will get into the game pretty quickly. But I didn't think of this until after the fact. And I was like, oh, man, them boys were just down the road. This really, because I was, you know, telling Witt, I was like, yeah, I feel like a lot of people were pulling for Houston. Or that is maybe the story that would hit the spot right now. And it felt like an upset or like a home loss or like the story that people were rooting for didn't come through. And I was like, wait a second. Oh, them boys are up the road. Nah, they in there. Their people are there. Like, this one hurts.
Yeah, nah, I think at the end of the day, Houston got Florida to play their game. And they still weren't able to pull it out. I don't know. Actually, earlier on today's show, I was trying to figure out if Houston could win if Walter Clayton Jr. scored 20 or more points. So all things considered, I would assume that they played the game that they wanted to play. Obviously, that I think the way that sports usually shapes out, it usually shapes up to where the things that we talk about throughout the season or the things that we talk about leading up to the game usually plays out. I think that the videos of Houston practices recently going viral about the way that they dove on the floor for loose balls, I think it was a little ironic that the game ended on a loose ball, that Florida was able to beat them too. So, again, all things considered, great championship game. I think the championship game definitely made up for some of the snoozers earlier in the tournament for sure.
Yeah,
we got good basketball. We sure did. I wouldn't say we didn't. I hate the last play. I definitely do. And it's sort of a microcosm of the Houston team from a season-long perspective, where if you just had to say what's the Achilles heel, what's the fatal flaw, it's what's there. We need a bucket. And at the end, they just needed a bucket. And they were out of timeouts. And I wasn't sure who they were going to. Wasn't sure what it was going to be. I believe it or not, Florida was my pick. I didn't make a bracket this year. I know that may or may not sound believable. I have no reason to make it up, but no. I just, in the several people who called me before the tournament, I was like, hey, yo, I like Florida. I do. I'm not trying to say anything, trust me, because I was not super duper tuned in year long, like just across the board in this college season. But about mid-January, I saw a clip of Clayton circulating, and I said, that looks pure. That looks very legit. And I caught a couple more games and then the conference tournament. And I'm like, no, this is a team. This is a team that is surrounding him of pieces that play well together. And it's working right now. And this is when it needs to. If Duke was there, who knows? You know, not a what if. I think at that Final Four will go down as one of the better, if not one of the best of the 2020s so far. And March never really disappoints, man. I come back to this almost every year. Like, it does the trick, as it's the second week of April. But March Madness does the trick.
Yeah. It typically does. I mean, like I said before, it doesn't usually disappoint. I think the last 2 years, at the very least, maybe you can go three or more. The women's tournament is a lot better than just the men's tournament from an exciting standpoint. And usually the men, we're looking at it from an expectation standpoint, right? We kind of already know what's going to happen in terms of the men's game a lot of times. With all due respect to UConn last season, I never saw a repeat champion with less buzz. And I'm sure it doesn't mean anything to them. Obviously, a championship is a championship, but I think college basketball has been lacking enthusiasm, just in excitement around the game. And sure enough, it obviously had a decent amount of excitement tonight. I say decent because I'm not sure how many eyes were on it, right? We won't know until tomorrow. But it was good basketball, and that's obviously all you can ask for. As long as the product is good, the eyes will eventually tune in.
I have a... It was sort of a brainchild of the last episode, an idea, but it made me look ahead till next year, and we'll have a version of the Pac 10 or something in college hoops next year.
I got to double check.
And we should just
coming back, so that's why.
We should just. Right. The Western United States, like, you know, conference.
Pretty much.
Feel like there will be a little bit of balance that brings. I feel like something, you know, I'm looking forward to what that element brings to next season, because you'll have that. And element within that is that you look at the Mountain West, for example. A team that now, you know, has put several teams into the tournament year in and year out. Yeah, just cycle. Is it New Mexico? Is it kind of Colorado State? Is it Utah State? Is it San Diego State? Is it the Boise State? Is it, you know, some of these teams will be sliding over to the Pac. Two questions. Do you, because it makes me, you know, look forward to, all right, well, now we have new energy and new competitive opportunity in the Mountain West, because somebody's got to be conference champion, and half the conference is, you know, dipping. So I want those boys to capitalize. I want to hear your thoughts on the regime kind of coming in a little bit. But I also think that to prevent what happened this year with the SEC situation, you could, you know, simply propose, would you agree or disagree with, hey, there's an 18 cap per conference for the tournament. You're not getting in more than 8 to make it 10. Maybe not so much about the number, but just saying like, hey, we could just nip this in the bud where be in your feelings if you want to. 10 are getting in, tops.
That's interesting. First question about the Mountain West. With all due respect, right, you look around at what you're doing in the Mountain West.
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I mean, it is what it is. You look around at what's going to be left in the Mountain West. UTEP, obviously Texas in terms of football in general, is going to be something that you have to answer to regardless. That said, I kind of look at UNLV and the decision to stay in the Mountain West and some of the conversations that I've heard before. This is a chance for UNLV to return to being a powerhouse. San Diego State is nationally recognized in terms of basketball, hell, and even football. You have at least one team out of, and obviously the college football playoff helps, but you usually have one team out of the Mountain West in college basketball and usually college football where the team is nationally recognized, right? Whether it's a Boise State, a San Diego State, you said it a second ago, whether it's Utah State, i.e. this year. I mean, this is UNLV's opportunity to be the lead dog. And to be quite honest, UNLV hasn't been the lead dog since I've been here in Vegas. And I got here in 2017. So I'm going on nearly 10 years.
We've been here for a minute.
Right. So I'm nearly going on being here for 10 years. And I haven't seen this team make it to the third day of the
conference. We wait. You've been there for a lot of those days too.
Don't remind
me. I really, really am hoping to see that as well. And I know you are as well. We've talked about how, because we've seen championship success in Las Vegas in that same amount of time that we've been here. So we've talked about what it's like to cover elite programs, championships, right? You know, post-game conferences, parades, who knows what. It's great. we wish everybody could do it. So, of course, we're pulling for it as well. And it's kind of almost like a tug of war of keeping it objective in coverage or commentary and still kind of like rooting with your heart. Like, I mean, I hope it goes well. There's plenty of time to go.
Unless somebody has a personal vendetta against a team or a school, I think all the players and coaches who feel like reporters want to cover a team that's losing, they're crazy. They just don't understand that that's not usually a part of the game. Like I said before, if that team doesn't go to the playoffs, you don't cover a playoff series. If that team doesn't win the championship, you don't cover a championship. That is what it is. So hey,
your season ends.
Right. Your season ends right along with them. So I think a lot of people like to, obviously, and as a person who grew up playing sports as well, I understand looking at somebody and wanting to make somebody the muse for your chip that's on your shoulder. I mean, obviously, in this media game, it's real easy to make it us. So I'm not too upset with it. But I'll tell everybody, even the people from UNLV who look at me crazy based on my commentary, I went to this school. So I have no reason to necessarily root against it.
Yeah, first of all. And right. Been a part of the program, like, you know, we are in the buildings and would want nothing more. I'm excited. I'm optimistic for the Running Rebels look into next year, and I'm going to give them time to put it together in the offseason, even though it moves quickly now. You don't have time to waste. I am disappointed in Deedon
based on
DJ Thomas leaving. One more time.
I said technically they're behind based on how quickly it moves.
Yeah. DJ Dippin, any feelings towards that?
A lot. I mean, to be completely honest, before he went out, he was your offense. And then when he goes out, your offense is Jaden Henley. And then you were trying to make sure that Bear Cherry was a focal point of that offense with either guy in. You lost all three. So I don't know what you want me to say at this point. There's no real roster to speak of, so there's nothing to break down.
Yeah, no, hence, the reference to that timeline. You don't have all day. There have been a few of these local guys. I haven't seen any of them, so we'll see. My thing with this team is that on the court, this team hasn't looked drastically different since maybe 2018, 2016, or 2018, 2017. Other than that, pull a game from any point in the season, and it could look like this. It could look like either running Rebel team from the last 5 years.
Yeah,
the eye test will do a lot more for me with this team because, like I said, don't know all these fools, all the recruits' status, and of course some of the names that we've seen, and that's different. But if this team looks different, if he can figure out an actual play, because we've heard the song and dance. We've heard, let's get back to tradition. Let's lean on history. Let's do all of that. But are y'all playing basketball better? Like, is it translating on the court? I really want to see the game, the team, when they are put together. So that'll be a footnote to watch. I don't know if you got to the conference tournament cap.
What do you mean if I got to the cap? In terms of
how would you feel about that? Like for just one conference into the tournament,
how many teams? Should it
be fair game?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, man, I think the issue becomes what's the alternative, right? It goes back to like all-stars in the NBA. It goes back to like all NBA teams at the end of the season. If you say a guy shouldn't make it, cool. Who do you replace him with? And that's kind of where I'm at, right? So are we going to take are we going to take a 20-win Auburn team who may have not won the SEC in the regular season and got upset in the first round, but they're still a 20-win team. They're a quality team. Is that going to be a team that ends up on a bubble, i.e. for Missouri State instead to get in? I don't know that that's going to yield better results either. I do think, what was it this year, 14, which was a record, was kind of crazy. I do think 8 is too
small. We'll say it's just two more from the Big 12, potentially, you know, just whatever the scenario could be, right?
I mean, I think 8 is too small of a number. I did feel like 14 was a lot.
Especially when we're down to five or six conferences, max, right? That's not right. It's more than that. But how many conferences are there now?
See, I think the issue is deeper than do you allow this many teams into the conference or into the tournament. I think it goes back to do you put a cap on the teams in the conference? Because you have certain conferences, as you said before, who have 8 teams in total.
Yes.
And then you the SEC who has 16, 18 teams. I think that's where we went wrong, to be honest.
Or just blow them up and y'all book your own regular season. You need 30 games. Go make your dates. Drop your own account, drop your schedule, and you got to play these 8 teams whenever you do. I don't know. Y'all figure it out. Y'all what babyface say at the Grammys? Y'all do that.
Y'all go do that. Because at this point, that's been
the issue. Yo, that's been in my head so much recently.
Because I don't have to, because similar to what he was saying, I don't have to put up with this. If you want to do that, go do that. Like, and that's kind of where I'm at with the conferences. If the conferences don't want to say anything and they want to let the SEC go and add a Texas and then go and add an Oklahoma and then go and add okay. Then you're going to be stuck playing North Dakota in week 4, and you have no choice. Like, you don't say anything, because now the Big 12 and the Big East, or excuse me, the Big 12 and the SEC are going back and forth in terms of scheduling, and the Mountain West is left cold. That's going to happen. So like you said before, when the Pac comes back next year, that's going to help things. But as long as one conference has 16 and 18 teams, this is what we're going to get.
Yeah, it's still going to be, you know, just predominantly you know, represent that group. The big man, that one is annoying, because it's like the whole country is in this conference. That is, I don't know, is that like, is that just the Fox sports conferences do we need to? I mean, I don't know. Like,
at this point, what it's looking like, and
that is the whole AFC.
Nah, what it's looking like, and I hate to be this guy, it's looking like we already have divisions in these sports, right? We have Division One, Division Two, all these different things. This is gonna start to mirror high school basketball very, very soon. There's going to be tiers even in Division One, and I feel like that's where we're headed. I don't know if that's good for the game. I also am not going to sit here and say that it's bad.
We got to stay here for a second.
There's going to be something that comes of this because it is going to become too top heavy. And real quick, while I add, if the SEC does get 15 teams like they did this year, you got to keep in mind there's 68 teams in this tournament. So even if my conference does get 14, I mean, everybody else has ample opportunity to get all of us out of
here. I'm trying to pull up the school that just demoted. What division they were in? They were a tournament team. I don't know if that rings a bell.
Not for me. Somebody.
They were D1. They reclassified to a Division III school. And I think that is, all right, just use the DJ Thomas move as Exhibit A.
Are you talking about
not that UNLV is about to...
You're talking about St. Francis?
I think so. I think I just found this. Yeah. Reclassifying from Division I to Division III.
Hey, man.
The president says the school has been concerned about the student-athlete experience for many years per this front office sports report to ask some
comments. So if they don't go undefeated in their first Division III season, I don't know.
Does that say more about them or about the rest of Division I? Like...
I think that's a great question. to be honest, the sports fan in me, I can't get away from it. It probably says more about them. It does. It probably says more about them.
I hope it does. the point, like, you know what? But there could be logic behind all of this. So not that UNLV would reclassify, but let's just make an analogy and let DJ Thomas be the Exhibit A. If LSU can pitch him something, a value that is worth our entire fund, do we think that we can compete?
I tell people all the time, and again, this thing is kind of, this is why UNLV fans feel like I have it out for UNLV, but at the end of the day, I will continue to say, the quicker that UNLV and its fans learn that it's a mid-major, the better off it will be. Period. That was my answer to everybody who asked me about Barry Odom. Well, that was the same question to everybody who asked me what happens if Dan Mullen has success. The quicker that UNLV...
He said, we are a stopgap, brother.
...and its fans understand that it's a mid-major, unless you get a Lindy LaRock, unless you get a Jerry Tarkanian, unless you get a Dwayne Knight, unless you get one of those legends that stick around.
That's rough.
The program.
That's rough. What changes that?
To be honest, the answer is different for UNLV basketball than the general answer. So how do you fix it?
Right, and it's not even really about the answer, but it's like, that's the question.
No, there is an answer as well. Are you asking about how do we do that typically or how does UNLV basketball?
Whichever one you feel, you know, more strongly about for the sake of the conversation, because I think it's, you know, meaty in the sense of like, if you feel like you're at a crossroad, I don't know, you just are running it back and you're trying to just click and not immediately get stung because your people performed too well that they're just going to dip or jump ship somewhere or get offered or get outbid on?
UNLV basketball has to identify.
There should be an answer. Sorry. There should be an answer for UNLV. There should be.
There's a clear answer, UNLV.
I'm going to let you go.
Address.
Yeah.
UNLV has to address and has to identify and admit to the mistakes that it's made in the past. Period. And one thing that I will always say is everybody's been trying to pinpoint how long this dates back to when things went left for the program. I'm a firm believer in, again, I open this conversation up by talking about irony, right? And how no Houston practice footage has been out all year long. And then before the championship game, they're showing how much they're dogs by diving on the floor, right? And then the championship game comes down to who wants it more and who's going to dive on the floor, and Florida does it. And I'm not even sure I saw a body from Houston on the ground. So I say all of that to say, you're going to try to go back and pinpoint whatever went wrong, right? UNLV has to do that. UNLV has to go back in its history and figure out where we went wrong. Because all I can do personally is speak to what I've been around since 2017. Based on the information that I've gotten and the data that I've collected, this has gone off the rails ever since Stacey Augmon wanted an interview for the head coaching job and he didn't get one. Things haven't been right in terms of this since then. I'm a firm believer in juju. I'm a firm believer in energy. I'm a firm believer in vibes, whatever you guys want to call it. I'm a firm believer in all of it. UNLV has had a negative energy around it since then. I know for a fact that other players, other championship players, have wanted to be considered for head coaching jobs, and their phone calls weren't returned. As I've said before, I'm not saying UNLV go out and hire every guy that's participated in your program as a coach and or coaching staff and or on the coaching staff. However, there's even a certain level of coof that it takes to not hiring somebody. And if one of your own reaches out for an interview, somebody who brought you the lone championship that you covet so much, at the very least, you should give that person an interview. It's small things like that that this program has to overcome before we even worry about winning basketball.
I think that couth is a prerequisite for success, for some ethical, fortune.
You fought Tony Sanchez in week 12 or something, and you got two more weeks left. That's not couth. That's just not what happens. Marcus Arroyo was actually... Never mind. Let me stop.
There's motion. And the other element to that, yes, you need to reflect. You need to keep it hot. And how can you get better at the now? And the right now is the NIL. And there's motion to how NIL works, basically where it'll funnel straight to the university. It's a model that is rolling out across the country, sort of in waves of as teams get, as it's like, all right, this was slow ball. Let's walk it. Okay. It's walking. Okay. Look, all right. We can sort of relinquish more control just to the per university status. It's happening in other states. College football is really leading the charge on it. How do we become somewhat of an NIL powerhouse? I don't know what that answer is. That conversation,
spend the money,
would have to happen.
The answer is spend the money.
It's also not right.
Vegas has the money. For anybody who has asked that question about NIL, and
thank you for bringing back.
Vegas has the money. It's just these boosters, at the end of the day, they want something to believe in, plain and simple. And they didn't feel that whatever
all right, you're right,
putting on the court was worthy enough to believe in. Thomas was Stop. A little something, right? But boosters refuse to open their wallets unless they know that there's going to be something coming back.
Yeah, come on now. Nah, you got to give us something to believe in. That's real. That's real. Hopefully that changes. You did bring it back to my original point, though. I mean, because, and then you answered it. I was wondering, I mean, hey, do they? We see the reports. Third year, we don't have the future years of Dan Mullen's contract quite figured out yet. Will he even be here in a few more years?
That situation was...
Do they have it? A budget deficit. They've been on the hot seat in Carson City.
Yeah.
These are only things that are on the record. But I do believe you. At the end of the day, if y'all do want that part, we can find it. It can be found.
I just said
it can be put together.
the boosters have the money. I didn't say anything about campus having it. Campus doesn't have it. That's why, with all due respect.
No, which exactly. That's
what I say. I'll do.
That's the connective. That's the connective piece.
I'll do my best to not like feel like I'm giving anything away. I don't think I'm giving anything away, but from the knowledge that I have, that Dan Mullen quote that went out about not having the money to pay for the end of the, for the back end of the contract, it ended up getting so murky and messy because the next day he said that he recanted it. Eric Harper recanted it. At the end of the day, I said it when it was originally said. It's not uncommon that happens. That's what happens when you're a mid-major. I remember when Deion got hired at Colorado, and they asked that athletic director, who was grinning from ear to ear when he walked out of that initial pep rally. They said, do you have, or how do you intend to pay for this salary? That man smiled from ear to ear and said, well, we don't have it yet, but by God, we'll find a way to get it to him. Because that's the truth. These tickets are going up. We expect to win games. We expect to get more endorsements from the surrounding entities. We expect for these boosters to back us a little more. Yeah. So when that original statement came out about Dan Mullen, I said, yeah, that's the way it goes. That's probably what's going to happen. That's just common sense. I think actually going back on the statement and saying we do have the money is actually the mistake.
Because, right, because it's there. It's not in their possession. That's all.
Hey, man. Or what happens if he doesn't finish his contract?
Yeah. Or, yeah. Nah, man. We had a couple good brainstorm thoughts out of that last episode because, yeah, we were like, do players need to enter contracts? To look, man, this is you are on a 2-year deal here.
I mean, at this point, I think there need to be amendments that if that were to happen, something like that to happen, there need to be certain levels at certain moments of the season. Like, you know, when you first apply to a class and you can't drop, or you could drop it with no issues, then you could drop it without a W, drop it with the W.
Yeah, like you get a weekend, you get like 9 days. Yeah, you can get a drop, you can get a clean drop, a W. Hey, or A is too late, player.
You take the grade. You take it incomplete. Like, it just is what it is. So I think at this point, I think college basketball is headed toward that. I don't think the idea of putting the NIL into the school's hands, I know it sounds good in theory. The purpose of the NIL was to keep Big Brother out.
I don't know if it does. I don't know if it does at all.
Like I said, it makes sense in theory.
I don't know.
The moment that... Yeah. You incorporate Big Brother again and you have those hands back there in the pot. Now we can end up in another just a revised version of what the NCAA was 15 years ago.
I think we just smoked a lot of that and we got to let it breathe because this conversation kind of doesn't end in the current state. Like there's a lot more questions than answers, but we're going to talk about it. Walter Clayton, Shiv is of the mindset that if he is on the board at 28 or 29, that the Boston Celtics draft him with 30 seconds left on the clock. I mean, with 30 seconds into their, you know, time, that the pick will be in. It'll be a done deal. Do you think he makes it that far? Hypothetically speaking, 28 and a half over under for his draft stop, for his draft pick.
The NBA is so weird. I think what happens is you look at a player sometimes and you watch a guy and you see a guy in college, right? And then you see a guy go to the combine or whatever the case may be. And you see him not necessarily put up the best numbers leading up to the draft, whether it be shuttle, whether it be NBA distance three-pointers, whether it be the five-on-five drills that they randomly throw these rookies into, whatever the case may be, teams start to overthink it, right? You look at somebody like a Walter Clayton Jr., especially on a night like tonight, right? And he didn't have a good game. And he found a way to still be effective when the game mattered. So he strikes me as a player that if you just know who, there's no way you're announcing 29 names before his. However, this also strikes me, I know it's not the exact same, but this also strikes me like a Carson Edwards type of situation, right? Where we saw what Carson did at the college level, at the collegiate level, his college year. Yes, he was undersized, right? But we still looked at him similar to what we saw in terms of Isaiah Thomas and said, he's still getting it done, though, right? And that's kind of where I'm leaning. I feel like it makes sense if one of those prolific college scorers falls to the end of the first round. But how much of a chance does he get once he does fall to said team?
Jalen Brunson was the name that came to mind for me. And not in the player comparison model, but just in a, okay, well, what does this person need to show you? Other than they guided and was a team captain of the team that won the championship and most impactful performer, you know, kind of in spots, if not throughout, like with a skill that looks transferable. Like, you know, I get it that there's some sexier attributes elsewhere, whether that's the size and athleticism of somebody or somebody else's, you know, pure positional fit. It should not come as a surprise that Jalen Brunson is a great player based off of the player he was in college. So, you know, Clayton was a standout at Iona last year. Am I jacking
that up? It's Iona. I feel like I could last year, but it's Iona for sure.
Right. Yeah. And in this current NIL era, shoot, guys have, you know, they have resumes. They got transcripts and they wear several jerseys. But it's kind of just about, hey, I don't know. I think that the hype's gonna push them up. I think that we're seeing it. That wasn't a bad reference either. I hadn't thought of the name Carson Edwards in a little bit of time. And the fact that he looks like he has a real good size on him, you know, just he doesn't, whatever height he is, he doesn't look undersized to me.
I see.
And I think that that will translate, as will the freaking pure jumper that he has. It's going to translate. Yeah. I'm not going to say what a certain highlight reel made me say of his.
They have him at 6'3", 195. On paper.
Solid frame on it.
That's a Steph frame. And I don't
know. That was the name. I said.
I'm aware.
Davidson.
I'm aware. Obviously, we know how this game works, right? And I'm sure I'll see Walter at some point this summer when we're at Summer League. But there's a good chance he's 6'1 and some change, 6'2 and some change. That 6'3 is with sneakers on. So I'm interested to see how he looks in person. But like you said before, the man could ball. I mean, it is what it is, right? So as long as a person can ball, it's not going to matter. I was looking.
Look at Austin Reeves. Man.
Talk about it.
I know he's a couple inches taller, but like, you know.
There's a lot of different players. I mean, Davion Mitchell is another one. Bronny is another one. Trey Young, I know that's all-star level, but that's another one who came in extremely undersized. If a player comes in and plays their game, Carson Wallace is not necessarily the biggest guy.
Case is not at all.
And plays his game, he'll be fine. And the funny thing is, I think he's going to come into Summer League, and I think he's going to play his game.
And what's also working to me, I'm saying that like I've been doing this for a long time. This is Jeff 100% a thought that came right now. But if you make basketball fans or journalists or anybody that talk about it, if you kind of have to make somebody work for a comp, that's kind of a good sign of your game in 2025. Like in a hybrid era, if you blend in to that where it's like, all right, look, I'm not sure, but what I'm seeing is working for this person. And it might be because we need more of this. Like, who was able to describe Jalen Williams coming out of Santa Clara from Oklahoma City?
I don't know if you
can. It wouldn't have been like, oh no, they would have been like, trust me, bro. Nah, he's like 6'5", 6'6", but he could guard the five for, you know, a month if your center is hurt. But and he can, you know, take anybody off the bounce. He's going to finish through the contact. He can hit the jumper. He can hit the midi. He can play the pick and pop. He can be the ball handler. Like, who's believing that? Like, and so, or who sees that vision for this guy? You just kind of got to get him and let the clay develop.
So I'm watching.
That's bringing me. All right, we got to get to this. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No. So I'm watching his highlights now, right? And I say it. I don't want to say it. Because he's not,
brother, that jumper.
He's not as big as this person, and this person lived in the mid-range, but I know I've seen it in certain games that I've watched, but now when I'm watching him play, he looks like an undersized
B-Roy.
And what I wanted to say also, he gives me Baron.
I felt it too.
He gives me Baron Davis with a much cleaner jump shot. And either way, I don't think you go wrong either way. Or he's Fred VanVleet with bunnies. Like, either way, like, I don't – those are three nice guys to be compared to.
In zero of these comparisons do we see flame out. Do we see – we don't know about the rookie extension. we see a piece, a potential long-term piece. I think he's lottery, bro. I think he's lottery off of. That's gonna sound crazy. Okay. I don't want to walk it back. You said what?
Clean and leave it alone. It'd be better suited for him to go to a place like an Orlando or Miami where he can go and develop, and he can go and
brother
centerpiece somewhere at a New Orleans, yeah. And where he, I shouldn't say a centerpiece. Pardon. Where he can go and be a valuable piece of whatever they're building. Respectfully, if he goes to Boston right now, you're going to have to wait 3 years before you're Peyton Pritchard. Like, I don't know if that's the best for him at this.
Oh, yeah, no. Shiv saying that, you know, seeing nothing but green and on some, oh, yes, we need him. He's like, I will part ways with Jordan Walsh for him. But other than that, Jordan Walsh is untouchable. Like... Right, you know what I'm saying? Like he's great. Nah, that's shit for you. I do feel like some of the hype is going to get to a few of those front offices in this draft. We got months to talk about NBA draft. Clayton could go very high. We saw last June that we did the order. Klingon and Shepard entered these conversations at the last sort of minute. You know, a couple weeks out. So. Stay tuned for what's going to move and shake in the NBA draft. The WNBA draft, however, is less than a week. Do you want my wicked take off the top?
Sure.
Or would you like to walk it up the court a little bit? You got anything, you know, any... You said, no, don't say that. No, back to you, my boy. Have you seen Dominique? Let me get it right. Have you seen Dominique Malanga? I didn't see her until today.
Okay. I'm doing some research. 19-year-old. Okay. Talk to me.
I love Paige Beckers.
Oh no.
I think Paige Beckers is great.
Oh no.
Bro, this could be the WNBA's Wemby. Right now, I don't know, and I'm not, again, dude, we don't need to overthink this one. Why didn't they say that we had a player like this on the, we're just finding out, it's just hitting the wires. Like, the WNBA draft comes out of nowhere. It comes out of absolutely nowhere. And then the season is right away. So it sneaks up every year, and Dominique, let me get it right. Malanga, we're going to get very familiar. Yep.
Yeah, I got some homework to do for sure because, you got me.
6'6". She's 6'6". She's 19 years old. She's from France.
I'm looking at what she did at the under-16 tournament. My God.
If I'm in the front office of – they have her going third right now in mock drafts to Washington. And Washington, if you guys get her at 3, that is incredible. That will be incredible. I think that, so the hot take is out there. Just speaking, you know, calmly now. Dude, she could be, and I'm not trying to put the pressure on her to do it right away. But she looks like a very fluid athlete, a rim runner. she's reminding me of Giannis on a WNBA court. And just water, the plant, let it do its thing. But we're seeing these rookies translate right away. And again, it's a little more on Paige Beckers now. Not easy on Paige Beckers. I'm not doing her. I'm a fan of hers. You think she was the?
Before you say this, let me press
from a draft
perspective that I am probably one of the biggest Paige Becker fans that you would be mine.
Good. I'm respect.
Be mine from my girl's a dope.
From a draft perspective, look at Embiid and Wiggins.
Okay.
Embiid, Wiggins had was a more high profile recruit. Embiid was a player that emerged on the national spotlight level throughout the season. And Wiggins was still the first pick of that draft to Minnesota. And Embiid went third. That's actually that's a difficult question as well. Just like in hindsight, would you rather have gotten whatever you could have gotten for either one of those players from the if nothing changes in their career, would you rather have just gotten that? But I don't think that we can argue which player. One player is an MVP and one isn't.
One was a valuable part of a championship team. I think what's interesting is this.
Which is why it's a good question.
And this is the only reason why I'm going to go with the original answer that I said back then. And I wasn't like, I'm consistent is what I'll say. The same way how I look at Kyrie Irving in his face, the next time actually I look at Kyrie Irving in his face, I should tell Kyrie, hey, I wanted to draft Michael Beasley number one overall. Like, I should probably tell him that. Or who came out with him? I think it was Beasley. But I wanted to go the pick, and I grew up a Duke fan, right? Just seeing Kyrie play at Duke for 11 games, I know what I saw in terms of talent, but I was just like, I mean, you didn't finish that year. And so I don't really know how I was going to look at the next level. I was kind of similar with Joel Embiid. So because of that, I'm usually hesitant to go to anybody that has those health risks in that first 5, 6, 7 picks. I'm usually not that guy to lean towards.
So what are you saying?
I would have drafted Wig, and I still would draft Wig.
Okay. How should we feel about Paige?
I feel like, and this is what I said earlier on the show, I had Jay Thomas from UNLV, formerly of UNLV, on the show. I'm going to be honest. The UConn Big Three is the reason why they won this championship. Every time I still saw that Big Three, Paige looked and felt different. And I still stand by that. I think she's going to go to the league, and I think she's going to be very, very consistent. She gives me Ryan Howard, and you know how high I was on Ryan Howard. So if I feel like whoever is getting Paige is getting that, she's going to be perfectly fine in this league. I think what's very interesting about Dallas, and I would do all my due diligence if I could, and I would try to get me a bullshit reader if they sell those, but Paige was extremely hyped behind the Valkyrie being in Golden State. She was extremely hyped about the colorway. She was extremely hyped about Natalie Nakase. If I'm Dallas, I need to know if I spend this number one pick on you that you even want to be here.
Very, very good question that they need to answer and try to ask and try to answer legitimately. Or they need to exhaust all options because the pressure will be on them to not make the pressure. Everybody's feeling the Luka aftermath. And that should not be their cross to bear. But unfortunately, the fan base out there, the climate is not the most polite right now.
Based on what you just said, and now that you bring it up, I probably wouldn't ask Paige. Because what if you don't draft Paige and Paige turns into one of those? Yeah, I'm drafting you. You got to play here. It just is what it is.
It all matters for that and for them and with this pick looming, and you all it's. That was the Wiggins conversation. So, like, if you're Minnesota, if you were whoever, whatever GM you were at that day, does that keep you up at night? Like, what if I took Embiid, but they told me I have to take Wiggins?
I don't think it does. If no pretended, I don't think you do. You do, And I don't think it does keep you up if you trust your process. If whatever process I've gone through in my head leads,
no pun intended.
Hey man, if whatever process in your head gets you to Andrew Wiggins, like for me, it goes to, I didn't watch you complete that season. Like, if Cooper Flagg didn't play in the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament, that would have been a little different than Joel Embiid playing 3 games, Kyrie playing 11 games, whatever the case may be. It would have been a little different for me, right? So, again, I'm that guy just in terms of health. And if I am the Minnesota Lynx, first of all, I already know who I want. I do. Now, whether that's Paige Bueckers or not, I'm not sure. But if I'm Minnesota, I've done all of my research and prepping before we even got to March Madness, right? So the biggest thing is making sure that that person is a fit for you. And I think that's where Dallas is. So to be quite honest with you, in terms of being that GM, no. When it gets this close to draft time, i.e. the NFL draft, if I'm the Raiders and everybody else, I've identified who I've identified. At this point, I just need to know the way the draft falls so I can know which guys on these lists I'm going to.
Because you have to, yes. And it's the complete different conversation. Pick one and sometimes pick two versus 5, 6, 7, 8. You have to start rolling with the punches when you're drafting in those spots. And, yeah, different approaches. You do have to – the risk assessment – and cost-benefit analysis of the decision is completely different at one. It is completely different. And Paige is built for it. So Paige is a safe bet, thankfully. Thankfully, and I hate to have even referenced that injury and try to seem like it's a weakness. For one, you know, everybody's been hurt. So stop it. You're not getting a player. You're not getting any player into entering the pros that has a perfect body. And mentality is the one that you want. How tough are you? Toughness is measurable to an extent. So I don't doubt it. The fans want it. So I think it will happen. I think that they're going to, this could be a great thing for Paige Bueckers going there. Seattle is on the board at 2. Best believe that she's gone at 2 if she doesn't. But I think that Dominique is in the conversation at 2, hands down. All right, now, you know, a couple mock draft I'm looking at has Sonia.
Putting her next to Neko Oguma?
One more time?
I said putting Dominique Malone.
I'm adding her next to whoever I have on my roster. if she is on the board. I would be. I'm taking a swing probably that direction, but they have her going third. Other footnotes, you know, Nisa Morrow, player kind of filled in the shoes that Angel Reese left at LSU. They've got her going top, you know, 4th, per se, to the Mystics. Kiki Arifin, 5th right now to the Valkyrie in the mock that I'm looking at. The Valkyrie had an interesting expansion draft.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Kate Martin getting the opportunity she's about to get over there. Kiki is probably going to be a good fit for them if she's available. Haley Van Lith is on the board. Interesting to see how high she may go now. I think that she had a very complete tournament performance to as a lasting impression, and it shined positively on her whole college journey. She's got the bronze medal with Team USA, and that's, look at how the men's team finished. So we shouldn't consider that, you know, a write-off.
Right.
Like, that's an achievement. And there's a few more international players that I'm going to catch up on between now and then. And this mock has Haley going 9th to the Sparks.
I was
going to
say 11.
You got Tahina Pau-Pau maybe going. Pau-Pau's going in the top 10, possibly. Different draft. Paige is sort of doing a little bit of heavy lifting in terms of name recognition in this draft, but the talent is coming. The talent is there. And it's getting deeper and deeper, hence expansion. So I'm looking forward to what this WNBA season will look like a lot. It's coming right on time. Like right when you think basketball's slowing down, it's actually not.
Yeah, Word. The Aces, I know, will be pretty fired up. I know Jewel Loyd is going to be excited to start afresh. Chelsea Gray said this is the best that she's felt in a couple of years. Jackie Young, I'm going to be honest with you. I watched her in the Unrivaled League, and Jackie looks like she's playing. It looks like she had an uptick. And this is going to sound crazy. It's almost like she had an uptick in her motor. And I don't know if that's just like a confidence thing or what it is. But I think not having Kelsey in that backcourt with her, I think is actually going to benefit her a little bit. And I think what's going to happen is we're going to see Jackie be a lot more aggressive, even on nights that she has that big defensive assignment, whether or not she can still produce on the offensive end, those big numbers when she's having to guard the best offensive player on the other end every night. I'm not really too sure, but I do know what I've seen this offseason from her. It looks like she's kind of relishing in that opportunity to have the ball in her hands a little more and show people what she can do with it. Because, I mean, again, whenever the offense is running through Jackie, it does feel like she can go get you 20 every night.
And we will see it. We will see it sort of for the first time, because Chelsea is at a point where she can play with and without whoever. And if she's on the court, you know the ball's moving anyway. And question is, right, how far does the ceiling go with kind of with Jackie? I think that that is the question that Becky Hammon feels like she confidently knows the answer to. Henceforth, the trust being exhibited and the way she talks about her. And she does look like that. We feel like, hey, if Jackie, if her usage, if her touches, if her volume goes up, it can be met possibly with the same sort of efficiency that she's put out there, to where we just unlock a new level of a player. You know, we just I'm, you know, trying to make some NBA comps to it, but.
In terms of her efficiency, I have one in terms of her efficiency, and it's going to sound nuts. Only because, and I'm going to be honest, I don't think we get this level of efficiency from her. At least I can't be too sure that we get this level of efficiency from her this season. But having Kelsey, having Chelsea, having Asia, you would look up some games and Jackie would have 20 points on 8 of 12 shooting. And as long as things like that happened for the Aces, things were usually good. So just in terms of quality of her shots, I mean, keep in mind, this is not saying that she plays like this person. This is not saying that she even has the stature of this person. But those are KD numbers. KD will walk into 20 points only missing four shots, three shots. Like I said, there were nights that I'm covering Jackie, and Jackie has damn near 20 points on 7 of 10 shooting. That's Devin Booker.
Oh, here we go. Devin Booker was in my, what was in mine? SGA.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
They're going to have to foul her.
Yeah, and they do that.
She is going to get to the line.
Yeah.
She has been playing the role just from a basketball sense. With the amount, with the reduced number of touches available, because Asia commands attention,
right,
and the ball has to move throughout the rest of them for the past couple seasons, she has played the role of a third option on this team.
She's a little,
of a Ginobili, of an OKC Harden.
She's tougher on defense than Donovan Mitchell is, but it's real Donovan Mitchell-esque what she does on the offensive.
There we go. There's an undeniability to her attack, to where it's not. You don't lock her up. You're not. She will find a way around you. She will hit the jumper. She will get to the rack. She will. And she will play defense. And she will do it again. She'll get up. She'll take the contact. Bro. Yes. Nah, she's yoked. I think that we both understand it right now about Jackie Young. And there is a I think we both think that Becky Hammon understands it, if anybody else does as well.
Absolutely.
And the rest of the girls in that locker room, Asia included. And, hey, hopefully this team's reinvigorated. Hopefully there's a fire right now. I think that there will be – we know that they've been just constantly in headline throughout the year, and that's not something that's going to go away as the brand and as the league gets bigger. So they have a bring-it-on mentality, and I'm looking forward to this team. I think that it's more competition, especially out west. Phoenix looks very different this year. The Sparks are going to look very different this year. Seattle's still good. Minnesota's still great.
You got it.
New York is still great. Atlanta looks very different right now. Where did Brittany Griner go? Atlanta. Did she go to Atlanta?
She did. She's in
Atlanta. Yeah.
I'm interested.
It's going to be a good season, bro.
I'm interested to see it regardless.
We didn't even mention it. Oh, did you? You might have said Indiana, and neither of us mentioned Chicago, but there will be a lot of eyes on Chicago.
That's who I mentioned. Chicago with Tyler Marsh. I'm interested to see what happens there. I know that Tyler has a lot of NBA experience as well, so I'm interested to see how he attacks having his version of the Twin Towers in terms of Camila Cardoza and Angel Reese. I talked to him Summer League, I want to say. I talked to him around Summer League time, and I asked him, obviously, what went into him picking that job, and he was like, honestly, seeing those two young players and wanting to be a part of their development, like wanting to see how far they can go and what they could do. So I know that he's going to come in. And again, just in terms of the work that he does, right? Jackie Young, we highlighted her a lot. I love talking to her about Tyler because she's the biggest advocate for what Tyler Marsh does when the camera isn't on, right? And as he said before, she was the first player that he worked out with when he got the job, and she was the last player he worked out with before taking the Chicago job. So he said Jackie actually bookmarks the start and the finish of his Aces career. So because of that, I know a lot of the jokes are, oh, Angel Reese can't finish at the paint. Oh, Angel Reese can't finish in the paint at the rim, whatever the case may be. Cool. She has the perfect head coach who he himself will sit in that gym with her if need be and make sure that she gets the reps that she needs. So I'm excited to see what happens with Chicago. And then, of course, I'm going to mention the Golden State Valkyrie. Natalie Nicasse is a basketball genius. I'm excited to see what she's able to do in the first year of that team.
That's exciting, man. Look at the branches, you know, look at the tree of, you know, Becky's got her own little pop army.
Yeah, man. That's exactly what it is.
That's crazy. The Belichicks of the world, you know, she got a little factory coming out of there. Last thing, bro, while I got you. Because what's incredible is we didn't even really mention NBA at all, like from actual content perspective. And we talked plenty of hoops, and y'all know what it is. Tell me about your Pacers, bro. Tell me about your Pacers, man. Hey,
Tyler Haliburton.
Don't water it down, bro. Would you buy in? Anything's possible right now. Cleveland can be beat. Dare I say Boston, they played with Boston last year.
This is where I'm at. I'm going to take it bigger than the Pacers, but one of these teams who will be a top four team on the East or the West, I'm not sure. One of those teams will flame out in the postseason. And I'm not sure who it is just yet. But let's say the Knicks were to flame out at the three spot. Let's say OKC were to get matched up with the Clippers. And the Clippers have, Kawhi.
Possible.
In one of the
everywhere. Players. It's possible. 1 through 16, almost.
So what happens if Houston ends up a second seed and they end up and Denver falls to a 7? Then I like Denver, right? So I just think one of these teams that we've been talking a lot about all year long, they're going to wet the bed in the first round. and it might be pretty ugly. It might be a We Believe type moment. It might be one that you look at it and you go, okay, you guys were really in one game by the end of this series. Again, I like Orlando. I like us in terms of the Pacers. I've been saying it all year long. I don't want to even call it a dark horse, but I don't care what anybody says. Every time I say this man's name, he makes me out to be a fool. As long as the Eastern Conference lets Giannis's Bucks get in the postseason, they have to deal with Giannis's Bucks. And I hate to say it.
I believe you.
I'm not saying that
I believe you.
A big part of what they have going, because he is. But that blood clot in his leg, again, get well soon, Dame. But just for the team perspective, that might suit them a little better because Giannis can go back to being Giannis.
And all you don't need to, you know, you don't want to see a Kevin Porter Jr. get hot. Realize that, you know, he's in a series where it's like, hold on, I can get my contract right here. Because I do think, because, hey.
let him have a Reggie Jackson type series where he's coming in and busting your ass for 5 straight games. It can happen.
And, you know, the Kuzes of the world, the Gary Trents, AJ Greens.
Get Bobby Portis back.
Brooke Lopez, very under the radar. If we were to get some Who's Hoopins on here, man, that brother's been hooping on the low. Like, Brooke's actually been giving some buckets and big games and just contribution where he's just gliding into whatever, you know, era he's in still. I'm with you on the Bucks, dude. I'm with you on that. Indiana, man, that team is deep. That team is deep. They have players that could almost be the flaw is, you know, who is it that you need? But I think that they do a pretty good job of.
I really don't.
No, I hope it's not.
Because I think the answer is Pascal. You go to the guy that's won, right? In terms of who do you go to when you need a bucket. And Pascal is a big that even at 6'10 can get the ball at the top of the key and break you down and get to the paint. I think the answer.
I saw that Halliburton 3 in real time.
I think what the Pacers need more than anything, and this kind of sucks, but it's what you need, right? The Pacers are in the exact same spot that Toronto was when LeBron was there, right? They need the perfect storm. They need it. They need to not see Boston. They need to not see Boston.
Right.
They need to,
knock on wood for somebody. You know, if somebody were to sprain an ankle, I know.
They need help. Is all.
Everything changes. Is all.
I'll say this: they shouldn't have got to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and that banged up Knicks team.
And they did.
Still took that team to 7. So let you know what you.
Yeah. Hey, Halliburton was trying to make up for lost time last year. We've seen him this season, you know, already be in high gear and then sort of look like he's hitting, you know, full speed again, like confidently. So if that means that we just get a different Halliburton, a year, you know, a second exposure level, beside Pascal, look, 2 games out of Mathurin. 2 games out of Nembhard, a game out of Nesmith, Jairus Walker making plays throughout, Obi Toppin if you need him, you know, TJ McConnell consistently. There's just a lot there that, right, combined with the perfect storm, who knows? I don't want to rule that out before it all gets going because they were knocking last year by hook or by crook, and then they didn't get smoked on by Boston. Like they got wrapped up.
Nah, but Boston. That was a Pacer pack in the air for sure. For sure, they walked through Indiana that Eastern Conference. I know they can't say it, but like at Summer League, catch one of the Celtics on the side and ask them like that Eastern Conference final. That somebody's gonna tell you that was easy.
Damn. That can come to fruition, and I think it has to now.
Somebody gonna tell you the truth.
My brother. They will. Especially in Las Vegas.
I think I have the person who will tell you the truth. That's fine. He don't need his name said.
My dog, man. Thanks for popping through, bro.
Always.
Follow the game. Talk That Talk Media. You'll see some of it everywhere. Check us out on socials. Interact. Do your homework. Tell somebody about the show. It is a lot to look forward to, and we're going to stay active. We're going to stay busy, man. That just about does it for me, bro, as well. Anything that you need on the way out as well, go for it. But again, bro, this was money.
As always, man, I appreciate you for having me on.
Yes, sir. Till next time, ladies and gents.